Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't need a bye. We just need hello. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and it's postseason time, baby.
Yeah, I don't really know what the Astros and Yankees and Dodgers and Braves are going to do for the next 6 days. I'm glad we don't have that problem. We're here. We're podcasting. The postseason is here. The regular season is over. After a long regular season of podcasting, we finally made it, and we are going to be previewing the wild card series on this here episode. But before we get to our four wild card matchups, we did want to take some time to talk about what has happened since we last podcasted, since I returned from Seattle the last few days of the regular season. The truth is not a whole lot, which is good.
The most important thing for listeners of the show is that Jordan took a nap.
Yes, I hope my voice sounds a little bit more normal. It's still pretty early recording, but look, I feel better. I feel more awake. It's not 5 a.m. It's really that simple. But the point is we did want to at least acknowledge some of the things that happened at the end of the regular season before we dive into our wildcard series matchups. And let's begin with the obvious. Aaron Judge, finally, our long national nightmare is over. Mostly just the Aaron Judge discourse, more than him actually finally hitting the home run. And so we are going to do our back page Barbacast segment leading off today before we get to our postseason stuff. And obviously, this was the biggest news. We'll get to a couple other game 162 things in a second. But Jake, I understand you have brought us a back page Barbacast, a couple headlines for us, or just one for us. Again, this is our segment where Jake brings a headline to celebrate a thing that happened in baseball, and I will tell him whether it is a good headline.
I have three.
All right, let's hear it.
Record scratch. You're probably wondering how Aaron Judge got here.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. That's so good. That probably would confuse, like, that's kind of a deep cut for
people. It's way too online for a newspaper.
Way too online for a newspaper. But, like, for me, I think that's fantastic. So I'm already super impressed. I wonder what else you got.
Sexy 2. Judge hot again to pass Maris.
Is it just sexy 2 or, like, okay. That one
sexy
takes a second.
Sexy 2.
Did you say Judge hot again?
Judge sexy 2. Judge hot again to pass Maris.
I appreciate what you're going for, but that one's pretty sloppy, I have to say.
Last one. Break fast. Judge gobbles up 60-second homer as Jews atone.
Love it. Would be way better if it was last night and not the night before. So the timing is a little bit messed up there, because in this scenario, he has broken the fast. I would say, what, 30 minutes in? 30 minutes in?
And that's related to what we're about to talk about. Now, Aaron Judge hits that little ding-dong on Tuesday night. And for the members of the Jewish community, of which Jordan and I are a part, I don't know if you went, Jordan, but there's a service on the first night leading into Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the Jewish year, called Kol Nidre, which I would say, just to be a little, it is the time which I feel the most Jewish. It is like my favorite Jewish service.
Yeah, I mean, it's the top of the Jewish service mountain. I mean, that's really when you're feeling it the hardest. But I did not go, but I will tell my story too. But right, so you were there. This was at about 8:09 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night.
It was like towards the end, I believe, of the Kol Nidre service. And here's how I found out about Judge's 62. After, 3 weeks of it dominating every aspect of my life, I get in the car to drive home with my sister. And my sister goes, "Oh, there was a home run." She looks at her phone. She just goes, "Oh, there was a home run." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "There was a home run." I was like, "Oh, it must be Judge. It's the only, because she got a Washington Post notification about it."
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, how did she find out? Why was she just saying that?
Right. But I loved that she said, "Oh, there was a home run." As if, I immediately assumed it wasn't like a Heimer Condelario 3-run blast, right? Yeah. It was probably Judge.
Yeah. No, it's a great point. Here's how I found out. So I was also trying to be general. I was not at Kol Nidre services, but I was generally trying to be offline. And I was just off. And then, but then I did get a text from my brother at 8:07, a text from my brother. Jesus Chinoco feels like Mr. 162. 8:08. Ha 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 ha. So my brother David managed to call that about 30 seconds before. Great call. If you had, you know, gave me a list of pitchers that would give up 162, I think Jesus Tinoco would be a great pick. So that's how I found out. Then I pulled it up and I was like, oh yeah, all right, and he did it.
Congratulations to Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. We're done. Congratulations to us. We don't have to talk about this anymore.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say.
Very impressive. He'll win the AL MVP. He'll deserve it. And next year, maybe he could break the record, the real one. Other things from game 162 that we missed because we were being Jewish. Mm-hmm. Stephen Vogt calling it quits. His kids announcing his final plate appearance was very cool. Good touch. The Oakland A's don't know how to build a ball club, but they certainly know how to say goodbye. Bogaerts, potentially his last game in Boston, because he's going to opt out. Who knows if they bring him back. Were there tears? Did you see tears?
I don't know if there were tears, but Bogaerts did say after the game, he was like, yeah, this is weird because like I'm still here. Also, this is a situation where like he is going to opt out. It's not like he is just an official free agent. Like he could just be like, no, I'm coming back. Like I love it here, right? But he will almost certainly test the market. And it was one of those things where it was like classy move by Alex Cora, but it's almost like Alex Cora admitting like, yeah, this is probably
going to be like here. I like it when team officials accept reality.
Yeah, but obviously, Boston fans, there was a bit of a bittersweet moment there. But yeah, there really was, obviously, there was no postseason things to be decided, not even draft lottery things. Congrats to the Nats, Pirates, and A's for the 16.5% chance of having the number one pick next season, which we'll find out during the winter meetings. And then the only other big piece of news, we should also just mention the Angels. One more Tungsten Armo Doyle game for good measure with Ohtani. Qualifying as a hitter, as a pitcher, dominating, Trout hitting a 500-foot homer, and the Angels losing to the A's.
That'll keep you warm over the cold, cold winter, Jordan.
Exactly. And then the last thing, a little bit of managerial news, which is that Mike Matheny is no longer going to be the Royals manager. Of course, if you listen to last week's podcast, I only just found out how bad the Royals are, so this really came as a shock to me. I couldn't really believe it, no. This was not surprising at all. J.J. Piccolo probably has been sitting on this for the last couple weeks. But yeah, Mike Matheny, adios to him. But Phil Nevin, for his great work this season, will be returning next year for the Anaheim Angels of Los Angeles, Anaheim, Orange County.
He earned it.
He sure did. Great work, Phil.
You did it, Phil.
I will say, in a serious note, I would imagine that that has more to do with the Angels ownership being in flux and then just being like, yeah, let's just be here and we'll, you know, fire you in June or whatever when we have everything else settled.
Shouts out to Mike Matheny for one of the most forgettable managerial tenures in recent memory.
But you know all what, right. though? Now he can fully focus on watching the Cardinals in the postseason. So congratulations to him.
Do you think we see him? Do you think we see him at Busch Stadium?
He might throw the first pitch. I mean, come on.
I heard he and Mike Schilt are doing a live stream watch party together.
Isn't Mike Schilt with the Padres? Am I crazy on that?
No, I think you're right.
All right. Here we go. It's time to preview the postseason. Jake, tell us how we are going to do these here Wild Card Series previews.
He is the third base coach, Mike Schilt. Okay, here's how this is going to go. We are going to go team by team, matchup by matchup. We are going to tell you their projected starting lineup and the projected starting pitchers for the three-game series. We're going to tell you why each team is good. We're going to tell you why each team is actually not that good, so they didn't get a bye-bye. They had to have a hello and play in the first round. We are going to tell you the key. People love X Factors, man. So we're going to give them what they want.
This country loves X Factors.
That's true. And Britain loves it even more. And then we're gonna pick winners because this country loves a winner. And then we're going to say goodbye. We're going to do that four times. And then we're going to say goodbye.
Yes, we are. We are going to go in order of...
Well, before we hop into this, let's just remind everyone that a new setup this year, different structure.
Ooh, yes.
We have the wild card round. It's a best of three. All right. All of the games take place at the stadium of the higher seed. All three games are home games for the better team.
And this is also an important distinction for fans of college baseball. who watch Super Regionals, which is also a best of three series, the kind of semifinals before you get to Omaha. Now, in those in college baseball, they're all at a home site, but the second game is for the road team. That is not the case here. All three games belong to the home team in the home stadium, and the winners, we will, of course, say, you know, which of the winners of these series will go on to face and who they will face in the next round. But we are going to go in order of the games on Friday. I know the order shuffles a little bit on Saturday, but in order, we are going to begin with the Rays and Guardians, then the Phillies and Cardinals, the Mariners and Blue Jays, and finish out with the Padres and the Mets. So let's begin with the game beginning on at noon. Tough bounce for
big noon.
For Clevelanders, which I have spoken to this week, who have been dreading the noon start on Friday, but I cannot say anyone is particularly surprised that they decided to put Tampa Bay and Cleveland at noon.
The loser of this series gets a salary floor for 2023.
Yes. Okay? So there's obviously some overlap here. And before we get to the projected lineup, I think the first thing is Kevin Cash and Terry Francona, who go back quite a while. Kevin Cash, who was on Terry Francona's staff and also played for him in Boston. They have a very, very friendly rivalry. So that will be something you'll be hearing plenty about during the broadcast this weekend. But let's get to the actual players, Jake. Give us the projected lineup for the Tampa Bay Rays.
Behind the dish, you could expect Christian Betancourt, who like a year ago was playing in Mexico, I think. First base is Harold Ramirez and G-Man Choi in a platoon. Second base recently has been Taylor Walls, which is hilarious because he's not very good. Shortstop, Wander Franco, the one Ray that you've heard of. Third base, Yandy Diaz, who's been one of the best hitters in baseball this year, believe it or not. And in the outfield, we'll go David Peralta, Manny Margot, Jose Siri, and Randy Arozarena in some form or function. The only other guy that you really need to know is Isak Paredes, who's been quite good this season. He'll fill in somewhere, and that's kind of the team. Then in the rotation, it's Shane McClanahan, the recently returned Tyler Glasnow, and then the three starter will be either Corey Kluber or Drew Rasmussen. Jordan, why are the Rays good this year? Because the Rays are always good, but it's always a different reason why they're good.
Yeah, and look, this has certainly not felt like one of the juggernaut teams of Rays past, where it's like, okay, you watch them, and even though you might not recognize that many of the names, they're really overwhelming. Yandy Diaz is a huge part of this team. He has been one of the best hitters in baseball. I believe he has the third highest on base percentage in the entire league. Not a ton of power, only 9 homers, but 33 doubles. He has been the most consistent force in this lineup. Randy Arozarena is also fantastic. No, he is not hitting a home run every single day the way he was in the 2020 postseason, but he is still one of the better outfielders in the AL, one of the better power speed guys in the AL. And then Harold Ramirez and Isak Paredes, totally incredible trade acquisitions. Obviously, Paredes at least had more of a prospect pedigree, whereas Harold Ramirez, who, if I recall, was at one point with Cleveland, last year he was on Cleveland. So, and Yandy, also a former Cleveland Guardian organization member. So, you know, there's a lot of overlap here. And also, like, obviously their pitchers get outs, even though it's not quite as dominant, particularly in the bullpen. This is still a team that knows how to get outs because they're the Rays.
They won 100 games last year. They won 86 this year. A 14-game womp-womp is pretty significant. A big part of that has to do with injuries. If you take a look at their lineup from last year's ALDS against Boston, there are only 4 guys who are still in that lineup. That's Wander. That's Randy. That's G-Man. Sometimes that's Manny Margot. Wendell is gone. Zunino is hurt. Kiermaier is hurt. Nelson Cruz, who was terrible for them, was on the Nats this year. They traded Austin Meadows away. Brandon Lau is also hurt. It's just a very different cast of characters. Jordan Luplo, who was their lefty crusher, he's not here anymore. It's a very different team, very different lineup, and something very bizarre about this lineup, about this whole team construction. All of the pitchers, except for Javi Guerra, are white dudes. And all of the hitters, except for Taylor Walls, are born outside of the U.S.
And you might have noticed this a couple weeks ago when they became the first team in MLB history to have an entire lineup 1 through 9 of international born players. That was not just like a weird outlier. Like, that has basically been the whole season, and it just happened to line up. I mean, Taylor Walls has played a lot. So very strange roster construction in that sense, but obviously a ton of trade acquisitions, you know, waiver claims here and there. I mean, this is That's how they do it. That is how this works. But it is certainly not as intimidating of a race team as in the past.
They have been pretty poopy the last couple of weeks. They are coming into the postseason on an L5. How much does that matter? Probably not a whole lot. When, you know, you have your best guy going on the mound, you can kind of wipe that slate clean. But it maybe is indicative that this team just isn't actually that good. Having Glasnow back after, you know, he had Tommy Johnson last year, that's a big deal. He's only made 2 starts since coming off the IL, but if he's at all Tyler Glasnow, that changes the calculus quite a bit. And then, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I mean, I've watched the Glasnow starts, and he looks like Glasnow, but it is pretty wild that he's just like back and now expected to, you know, pitch one of these first 2 postseason games. I mean, I would too if I had Tyler Glasnow. Might as well. Like, I'm sure he wants to, but it is a pretty big ask. Like, it would not shock me at all if he struggles on Saturday, just because he has not pitched very much, and that's a pretty big assignment.
Now, the Friday starter is going to be Shane McClanahan, who started the All-Star game for the American League. He's been incredible all season long. Had a little bit of an injury kerfuffle the last month or so, but he should be good to go in game 1. When good, he's as good as a pitcher can be. I mean, he's a left-handed guy who throws 100. And then I guess the last thing that we want to mention from this team, Pete Fairbanks, who you might remember from a 2020 postseason fever dream. He's the guy with the big eyes on the Rays who is pitching all the time. He is all the way back. He is psycho, and he's very good at pitching.
Yeah, but he's been he was really good in 2020, meh last year. He's been unbelievable this season since coming back. A 1.13 ERA. 38 strikeouts and 3 walks in 24 innings. I mean, look, they've got all kinds of relievers that you've never heard of throw from weird angles. Pete Fairbanks is just, he's getting up there and just throwing it by you. He's throwing harder than ever. He's been fantastic. And then the last race, I just mentioned all the former Cleveland guys. Hello, Corey Kluber's on this team. And Corey Kluber, whether he would start a game 3, I think is debatable considering how success he's had this year. He's had a very weird season where he has decided, I can't really strike that many guys out anymore. Well, the least I can do is just never, ever walk anybody. I believe he had the lowest walk rate of any starting pitcher in baseball, or at least one of them. But he has an 84 ERA plus, a 4.34 ERA, 164 innings. So, look, I don't know, man. What do you think? Do you think it would be him in game 3?
If it is, do you think does the robot have a GPS? Does he know he'll be in Cleveland where he used to play, or is he just beep bop boop bopping on the
mound? Right. It's like, is it going to be any more notable for him?
Does he tip his cap? Like, right. No, he doesn't.
Certainly not in a postseason game. So I'm intrigued about that decision, because Rasmussen, you know, at times, I mean, I think he was our closest perfect game bid this year, right? Yeah. I mean, he had a run there in the first half of the season, not as good, but overall, he's been much better. So feels like they would probably go Rasmussen, but I'm not sure.
Now, Kluber's madness is a big reason why they are a wild card team. Second most innings on the team, 84 ERA plus. Other reasons this team is simply mid: everybody got hurt and they don't have a bopper. Like, they don't really have... Yandy's great. He just hits the ball on the ground. He has 9 home runs. Randy is good and not great. The bullpen this year, as opposed to previous seasons, is just regular good and not historic. So that's the Rays. There's a reason they kind of dropped behind the Blue Jays and the Mariners in the wild card race. This is the most underwhelming Rays team we've seen in a while. That being said, they always have a chance.
Yes.
To do something funky.
don't let yourself be too surprised if they somehow sneak through this series. But they're going up against a very fun team, and that is the Cleveland Guardians, the first era of Guardians baseball. And this team has been a delight to watch all season long, making any silly fans who were stressing about the name change and arguing that, I hope the idiots that were like, I'm not watching this team anymore, they're called the Guardians now.
It's like, oh, well, here's the most entertaining team we've had in like a decade.
Also, it's like, guess what? They're definitely watching. So Jake, tell us about who we can expect to see on the field for the Guardians.
Behind the dish, it'll be Austin Hedges and Luke Maley splitting time. First base is usually Josh Naylor. They'll DH a little bit too, and they'll put Owen Miller at first sometimes. Second base, Andrés Giménez, who will finish top 5 in the MVP. At shortstop, Ahmed Rosario, former Met. At third base, Jose Ramirez, the talisman of this Cleveland squad. In the outfield, you'll see Miles Straw in center. He is just terrible at hitting. In the corners, you'll have rookie Stephen Kwan, who has been just incredible all year. You can make an argument, like, he'll finish third in AL Rookie of the Year, but he maybe should be too. In right field, you'll get Will Brennan, who was called up like 3 weeks ago and has been incredible, or a gentleman named Oscar Gonzalez, who you certainly haven't heard of. On the mound, it'll be Shane Bieber, Tristan McKenzie, and Cal Quantrill. All right, Jordan. What a weird freaking team. The thing to know about this team more than anything else, they make more contact and strike out less than basically any team in the last 5 years. Their contact rate is the highest by a single team since the 2017 Astros. And I assume the Guardians don't know what pitches are coming.
Yes. No, I mean, this has been, if you follow just Guardians player development, like, this is kind of their whole thing is just acquire as many guys as possible that do that. But it's also fun that, like, even the big guys, like Josh Naylor, doesn't strike out very much. You know, like, that is a big thing. And obviously there's stars like Jose Ramirez. That's part of what makes him so special, is that he has 29 home runs and 82 strikeouts. Like, he's one of the best players in the world. And now Andrés Giménez, we have to pause and talk about him here for a second, because as you mentioned, he could very realistically finish in the top five in AL MVP voting, and yet he bats sixth. He bats sixth and could finish top five MVP. It is one of the weirder lineup construction things that exists. When I saw the Guardians a month ago, I went in person and I was like, I asked him, why is he batting sixth? Apparently that's just where he's comfortable hitting. It's
best
very
hitter
possible.
Bat six, Jordan.
Yeah, that's what the smart teams say. It is very strange. Like, you can see he has like 100 fewer at bats than Amed Rosario, despite being healthy the whole time. And Amed Rosario has had a good season. It's not like they're totally throwing away with bad hitters, but it is one of the stranger parts of this team that I do not expect to change. But the point is that Andrés Giménez is awesome. And he Lindor is amazing too. It's not about who won the trade. The point is that the Guardians are feeling just fine right now because
the Guardians did not lose the trade.
That's for sure.
That's for damn sure. Giménez has been amazing and Rosario has been spectacular. This team doesn't hit home runs though. They are second to last in all of baseball in homers, ahead of only the Detroit Tigers, who I think employed mostly grade school children in the lineup this season. Cleveland has 127 home runs. That is literally half what the Yankees had, and those teams might be hurtling towards one another for an ALDS matchup. But they were able to win a lot of games because the bullpen is really good. This bullpen quality is like what you would expect from a typical Rays bullpen.
Yeah, and I just love the variety here, right? You have the traditional fireballer in Emmanuel Clase, one of the hardest throwers in the entire league with his 100-mile-an-hour cutters. You have some total funk with Sam Henches, one of the crazier left-handed matchups you're going to see. Huge left-hander. He's fantastic. Nick Sandlin, more of the sidearm look. Eli Morgan, who's throwing just like only changeups, and you're watching him and you're thinking, how is this guy not getting crushed? Trevor Stephan, his splitter, one of the best single pitches of any reliever in baseball. And then, yes, crazy James Karinchak is also back. And while he is not as good as he was when he was clearly using sticky stuff all the time, he is now still back to going very good, where he is maybe still using a good amount of sticky stuff, but not as much as he used to.
I know that umpire rubbed his hair, but I'm still skeptical, man. And I think that's okay, considering how skeptical James Karinchak is about certain things in our society.
But also, you know, Kirk McCarty has been okay. Cody Morris has come up and has been pretty solid, also as sort of a spot starter. But Clase, Stephan, Henches, Sandlin, Karinchak, Morgan is just dynamite. And it
put that on
the game,
a t-shirt.
Right? It shortens the game. And this, the starting rotation is maybe not as good as some of these past Cleveland rotations have been. And Quantrill is solid. Maybe would have a toss-up. Plesac has certainly regressed. And Savali has certainly regressed. So, you know, maybe we're worrying about that in the next round more than this round. But in this round, three games, Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, with these relievers, I think puts them in an excellent position.
Key to the series, Jordan, is who can hit a home run. I will set the over-under for home runs at 1.5 total for the whole series.
Okay, I think that's insane. I think I would put it at like 3.5. But again, I mean, if it's a two-game series, maybe that is the number. We'll find out. I'll take the over. First of all, Glasnow too. I mean, he can give him. I can see him just get someone getting on top of a Glasnow fastball and sending it 450 feet. But no, it's a good point. That could very well be the difference.
If Naylor homers against McClanahan, his head's gonna pop off left on left. Woo!
it's very true. But Cleveland does certainly seem a lot deeper, and they've just been even. You know, look, how much credit do you get for winning the AL Central? You know, I don't know. But I think let's do our picks now. Who you got here?
I got the Guardians in two. McClanahan has a 3.86 ERA over the last 2 months. And I trust Shane Bieber when push comes to shove. And I know Glasnow is great, but the guy's barely pitched.
Yeah.
And Tristan McKenzie is my preferred skinny boy king. So I will take Cleveland in two.
I'll go Cleveland in three. But I will not be surprised at all if the Rays somehow do this. All right, let's move on to the second game, game one will be at 2 p.m. Eastern on Friday, and that'll be the Phillies visiting the St. Louis Cardinals. The Phillies, oh man, if you listen to our podcast last year, all kinds of discussion about, oh, Jake was all in. Jake was all in on the Phillies.
I was a year early, baby.
You were a year early. I remember in March, we were in Clearwater covering some spring training for Fox, and I wrote a little thing about just like, is this it? Could this team finally do it? Can they outscore their defense? And it turns out they did oh so barely. Let's see. What are their run differential?
Jordan, okay, you don't have to be faster than the Bear. You just have to be faster than the Brewers.
It's so true. Plus 62. Okay, so not totally terrible. It helps to have Kyle Schwarber hit 700 home runs. Jake, give me the projected Phillies lineup.
Behind the dish, JT Realmuto, the best catcher in the world, though Adley Rutschman is alive.
We have to point this out. I mean, I'm pretty sure the splits. Since you wrote Adley Rutschman the best catcher in the world? I think Realmuto read that and said, this is ridiculous. And he has truly gone supersonic in the last 2 months.
Correct.
And I appreciate it.
Realmuto, an avid reader of FoxSports.com. At first base is friend of the show, the face of this Phillies team, the longest tenured Phillies hitter, our buddy Rhys Hoskins.
Congrats on the playoffs, dude.
Congrats on the playoffs, dude. At second base, Mean Gene Segura, who had the longest playoff drought of any player in baseball. It was the most games played, I believe, without a postseason appearance, so he'll break that.
And that is Gene, the hitting machine, who has been on many teams. And so
yes.
It is both more impressive that he's been on that many teams and not made the postseason, and also, you know, make of that what you will.
At shortstop, the man who had Bryce Harper as a babysitter as a kid, Bryson Stott. Third base, the tall Nebraskan Alec Bohm. Right field is Nick Castellanos, who has just underwhelmed all season long. Center, you can expect Brandon Marsh, a man who looks like Jesus. In left, it'll be Kyle Schwarber. And then DHing is Bryce Harper because he can't throw right now. That's the Phillies on the mound. It'll be Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and Ranger Suarez, I believe. What a weird team. The things you need to know about them. Front end of the rotation is legit. Nola and Wheeler is about as good as a top two can be. Obviously, you'd probably rather have DeGrom and Scherzer, but Nola and Wheeler is frontline stuff.
Yeah, and it seems like it'll likely be Wheeler in game one. I don't think we have those announced. Oh, yeah, they did announce that. So Wheeler for sure game one. Seems like Nola game two after Nola's incredible performance against the Astros in his regular season finale. I mean, again, you know, coming off of talking about Cleveland, you know, this team strikes out plenty. Duh, of course.
More than enough. Schwarber.
They have our friend Rhys who is good for a whiff or two in his time. And so what that means is that with the bad defense and with that kind of you know, mercurial offense and a lot of young players who have had cold stretches or cold starts like Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm, a very uneven season, right? This has not been a Phillies team where it's just like, oh, the bullpen, right? This bullpen is fine. And that is a huge step up and a big reason why they are here. Because the truth is, Sir Anthony Dominguez, who has been a little not quite as good in the second half, but he is good. Jose Alvarado is good, as maddening as he can be to watch.
Andrew David Bilotti. Robertson is the most David boring Robertson. Baseball player maybe in the 20th
extremely
century.
Boring.
21st century.
totally good. Good trade acquisition, right? Like, and now, you know, Syndergaard's in the bullpen. Connor Brogdon has been solid as well. So it's like, it's fine. That's what the Phillies have needed. Fine. They've just needed fine in the bullpen. It's not a strength. They can still blow games, but it is fine. But that plus what is very good starting pitching and a whole lot of dingers and some hot streaks here and there it's a really good lineup when it's clicking. And that is why they're here, because let me tell you, Milwaukee did not have that.
Why is this team not actually that good? Well, Bryce Harper, for the last month, now he's been playing through injury all year. He got hit in the hand, right? And missed a bunch of time, and then like tore a labrum in his shoulder and like needs surgery and can't throw. And he's gritting it out. He's grittying it out. He has been awful for a month now. His OPS dropped 100 points in September.
Yeah.
For a guy who, I mean, the full season line is still spectacular. He's still like Bryce effing Harper. Don't get me wrong. Just something to keep an eye on. The other reason this team's not very good is the defense is just awful. It is, I don't care what defensive metrics you're using, UZR, ABC.
The point is, like, there's only so much you can do, you know, when Schwarber's in the outfield and Castellanos is in the outfield. And Marsh is pretty good. Marsh is pretty good out there, right? But Segura and, I mean, look, Real Muto.
My man Alec Bohm has worked really hard to be merely bad and not unplayable. He's just so far from the ball. Like, he's all the way up there, and the ball's all the way down
all
there.
All the way on the ground. Like, ground balls are, like, on the ground.
It's so far away.
Stott has been fine, right? But, like, it's just, it's not a great defense, obviously, right? And, again, sometimes you just have games where they strike out, you know, 15 times, and the young hitters just can't do anything, and it's like, oh, yikes, right? That happens. But it has been enough to sneak in as, of course, as we should note, the third wild card, where again, if last year maybe it would have been coming up short, but that's fine. We are thrilled to see the team posted. We do enjoy watching the Phillies, and we are happy that they are here. Anything else on them before we go to the Cardinals?
No.
All right, Cardinals, your NL Central champions, who will be taking the field for St. Louis?
Behind the plate will be Yadier Molina. Who is unfortunately, unlike Wainwright and Pujols, is not good anymore. This man has overstayed his welcome in terms of production. At first base is Paul Goldschmidt, who is maybe the best hitter in the world not named Aharon. Second base will be Brendan Donovan, a man who we'll talk about more in a second. Sometimes it's Tommy Edman over there. Shortstop is sometimes Tommy Edman, usually Tommy Edman. And then Paul DeJong is back from the dead, but still not good.
Not back. He was back from the dead for a second, and he, I think, has like a 200 OPS in the last month. So
yeah, I would understand.
Be stunned if he is. I mean, maybe he'll be on the roster. He still plays decent defense, but I don't think you will see much of him.
Third base, Nolan Arenado. You know the vibes. In the outfield, Dylan Carlson in center. You'll get Corey Dickerson in left. You'll get Lars Nootbaar in right. You'll get, when he's healthy, Tyler O'Neill, although I don't think he's healthy right now. You'll get a guy named Alec Burleson that you've never heard of, a guy named Ben DeLuzio who you've never heard of. It's just a mish and a mosh. And then their DH is this lad named Albert Pujols. On the mound, it'll be Adam Wainwright, Miles Michaelis, Jose Quintana, and Jordan Montgomery. I believe Jack Flaherty is going to be working out of the bullpen for them in October. Jordan, why is this team good?
This team is good because they have arguably possibly top two MVP finishers in the NL. We will get to Manny Machado later. I think he has a strong case as well. But Goldschmidt, who seemed to be the runaway favorite for the first 4 months of the season, and then Arenado, who has seemingly closed the gap in the second half. That is an unbelievable duo. And the depth behind them is weirdly probably more reliable than what the Phillies have, the team that they're going up against. And a big part of that is the fact that the defense is excellent. This infield defense is, I think, pretty indisputably the best in the league, as it has been already for the last couple of years that we've seen. Of course, the Goldschmidt-Arenado tandem is amazing, but Tommy Edman moving to shortstop. If you're wondering why Tommy Edman is atop all the WAR leaderboards, that's because he's playing an amazing shortstop in his first full season there, and that has launched his WAR totals to crazy heights, even though He is merely an okay hitter. So that is, it is an incredible defense. And that is very important because this pitching staff does not, besides Ryan Helsley, does not strike out anybody. This is how they have built their team. Adam Wainwright is still effective, but he is not striking anybody out. Miles Michaelis is effective. He is not striking anybody out. Jose Quintana and Jordan Montgomery are not striking anybody out. And then even Jack Flaherty, since he got back, we're not getting whiffs, right? They're putting the ball on the ground. They're letting their defenders do work. And it has worked. It has absolutely worked.
It'll be a fascinating matchup against the Phillies team who strikes out a ton. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, I think the Phillies will win that battle where the stuff from the Cardinals is going to be meh. And I think the Phillies, like, one of these games are just going to tee off. I think we're going to have one of these games where they score 9 runs.
It's very possible. But I would also say that the Cardinals' bullpen, mostly because of the emergence of Ryan Helsley as probably a top 5 reliever in the league, is much closer to a strength than it has been in recent postseasons. And I think that is something you cannot deny, because Helsley is amazing. And that is, if you can get it to him and he's healthy and he's throwing well, that is a pretty good sign you're going
to
win.
You also have to account for the Cardinals' October Devil Magic, which will involve probably Brendan Donovan, a slap-hitting rookie who put up 4 WAR this year, hitting 7 home runs in the postseason on their way to a World Series title. Last thing to say about them, Albert Pujols, it's not just been fun. He's been a actually good baseball player for about 3 months.
Yeah, and the Pujols thing cannot be talked. That will be the story no matter what. He will get more attention than all the other players, as he should, right? There are so many versions of the season where he could have been DFA'd in June, and instead he's one of the best hitters in the league. That is amazing. It is super fun to watch. How can you not love Albert, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing I'll say about people, look, if Donovan and Newt Barr and Edmund and everyone's like, oh my God, it's like, these guys have been awesome the whole season, right? So it's not like they pulled these guys, you know, out of their ass in the middle of September. So now let's just make that note.
If Alec Burleson and Ben DeLuzio are incredible, then yes, these are guys they pulled out of their ass
now
in September.
Conversation. All right,
the pitching matchups, Jordan, we have Wheeler against Michaelis, I believe, in game 1, right?
Seems like it. I don't think they've announced the Cardinals yet. But
okay. And then that would mean Nola against Wainwright in game 2. And then Ranger Suarez probably against either Quintana or Jordan Montgomery in game 3. Key to the series for me is the Phillies defense. If Nola Wheeler show up and they're themselves, it just comes down to, can the Phillies turn batted balls into outs? Because we know the Cardinals will. Jordan, who you got?
I'm taking the Cardinals. I'm taking the Cardinals at home. I'm taking the Cardinals as a team. It just feels like that this run will go longer than most people want it to. And I think they're really good. I was one of the only people that picked them to win the division. And I just think I'm just going to ride out a little bit longer. So Cardinals in 2.
I got Phillies in 3 on the road. I think either Nola or Wheeler shows up and just takes care of business. Mm-hmm. And I am going to put my chips in the Ranger Suarez basket and say that he just dominates inexplicably in game 3 and they win the series. All right, let's take a quick break and we will be right back to discuss the Toronto Blue Jays. And Jordan, on my sheet, this says the Seattle Mariners are in the playoffs.
This is it. Are you trying to prank me? Are you trying to, like, because I watched the Mariners yesterday and it's like, I was like, all right, it's been a fun season.
Gonna miss these guys. Actually, Ashton Kutcher's in your closet. He's gonna hop out the screen.
All right, we'll be right back here on Baseball Barbercast.
Buck O'Neill dedicated his life to teaching us about the heroes of the Negro Leagues and demonstrating that you could get further in life with love than you could with hate. Now is our opportunity to say thank you to this legendary man. Join the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum as we celebrate Buck's long overdue induction into the National Baseball Hall of Fame by supporting our Thanks a Million Buck campaign. It's an effort to raise at least $1 million by fans donating a buck or more in support of the NLBM. Remember, every buck counts. To donate, visit thanksamillionbuck.com.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast, the only podcast, Jordan, that yesterday was faster than Terrence Gore.
Wow.
That's a Yom Kippur joke.
That's a very well done. Terrence Gore played yesterday, so let's not be hating on him too much. All right, let's move on to our third wild card series. Involving, again, it says here, the Mariners. That's my favorite team. Is that right? Am I seeing that correctly?
I think you are.
Okay. Wow.
We'll talk about how you're feeling in a second.
That's fine.
But let's just talk about the teams first. The Mariners projected lineup. Jordan, can you just, you want to just do this off the dome without roster resource?
Yeah, I mean, I will say it has changed a little bit over the last month due to injuries and bizarre breakout performances. But let's go around the horn. We'll begin behind the dish with Big Dumper himself, Cal Raleigh, who, of course, is the reason the team is here. Cal Raleigh is not just folk hero. He is leads all catchers in home runs with 27. He is pretty good. First base, Ty France. That's all-star Ty France to you. Second base will likely be Adam Captain Slapdick Frazier, as Mariners fans have been calling him. At shortstop, J.P. Crawford. At third base, Eugenio Suarez, who has just been tremendous in the outfield. In center field will be someone named Julio Rodriguez. He is maybe something of a difference maker. We'll get to him in a bit. In right field, you'll see Mitch Haniger. In left will likely be one Jared Kelnick, as Jesse Winker is on the IL, and Sam Haggerty. Yes, Sam Haggerty, who has been very important, is also injured and out for the postseason. So it will likely be Jared Kelnick and perhaps Dylan Moore in a platoon in left.
But it does bump our buddy Taylor Trammell onto the postseason roster.
Very likely Taylor Trammell will be on the postseason roster. And then at DH will be the man who arguably saved the season, Mr. Carlos Santana. The rotation for the these three games will very likely be Luis Castillo, who we know confirmed in game one, Robbie Ray, who now does not need to be vaccinated in game two in Toronto, and then Logan Gilbert, who has been sensational lately in game three. Seems like it'll much more likely be him than George Kirby based on how the two finished their regular seasons. So that is the Mariners. Why are they good? Jake, tell me about the Mariners.
I'm not totally sure, but I'm going to, can I guess?
Yeah, give it a shot.
Julio Rodriguez is not just fun and cool and young and smiling. He is actually fabulous at baseball already. It's not potential, it's reality. He gives the Mariners a dynamic that they lacked last year. He is the difference in a lot of ways between this year's team and last year's team. You watch the Home Run Derby and you saw him, you get it, right? You see him do one thing and you're like, oh, yeah. Okay, I wish my team had this. Yeah. The second best hitter on the team is probably Ty France.
Yeah.
Right?
France and Suarez each have an argument. France is the only guy who can, I guess besides Julio, who can get hits. So this is an important thing to know about the Mariners offense. They don't get hits, right? And so you may think, well, isn't that why, that's how you play baseball, right? You get hits. It's 2022. You don't need to get hits. You just need to get on base. And the Mariners are third in baseball in walks, but 26th in batting average. And that amounts to a perfectly solid offense on the whole that is very good at getting some walks and hit by pitches and then hitting a huge home run. That has been their season all year long, which is maybe a bad recipe and maybe a perfect recipe for the postseason. We will find out.
As Kanye West once said, here's another walk, Barry Bonds.
Here's another walk, Carlos Santana. This team has, again, it has been a lot of clutch. I saw some stat that they are the first team since like the 1880s Reds to lead baseball in one run wins in back-to-back seasons. That is not something you're supposed to be able to do consistently. And yet Scott Servais has managed to manage a team to allow that to be possible. The other strength of this team is the pitching, more so than the offense. The pitching is something where you look at and you actually understand how it is good. And that is because of that top three of Castillo, Robbie Ray, and Logan Gilbert, as well as George Kirby, who is also going to get some nice little Rookie of the Year votes, I believe. And the bullpen has been sensational. And no, you might not have heard of all of these guys, but Sewald has been great. Andrés Muñoz is really the guy to watch. I think the guy that will be the number one dude out of the pen when they really need to get some outs. He throws 103 miles an hour with one of the best sliders in the game. Penn Murphy, Diego Castillo, Eric Swanson, Matt Festa, Matt Brash. Matt Brash especially has been amazing since moving to the bullpen. And you just look at their numbers. Everyone's ERA is under three, basically. Everyone's getting a crazy number of strikeouts. And yeah, it's just a really deep pitching staff. And Luis Castillo's arrival has completely changed the complexion of this pitching staff and whole team.
Jerry DePoto, the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, has made many trades in his time. And I think there's a chance that none will be more significant than the Luis Castillo trade. When everyone else was playing chess, he played checkers. At the deadline, when every contender was lining up their biggest package to try and get Mr. Juan Soto, Jerry said, nah, thanks. I'm going to go get Luis Castillo right now. They bypassed Go. They collected $200 and they gave up quite a bit to get the best pitcher on the market. Because if you watch Luis Castillo, you immediately understand that he is a game-changing acquisition for the Mariners. He is a front-line guy. I don't know if he's one of the best five pitchers in baseball. Probably not. Maybe not even in the top 10. Probably back half of the top 10. But you watch him, and he, more than really any guy, knows what he's doing. Like, you could just see him. He is a craftsman. And for the Mariners to have this guy for the postseason and for the next, you know, what, 6 years?
Yeah, 5 years? Right. And extending him was a huge part of it. And I think that was clearly what they wanted to do all along. When you're giving up two great prospects in, you know, Marte and Arroyo, and I wish them well. But, like, why are they here? Why do the Mariners exist? Because they want to win and they want to break the postseason drought. And waiting for Edwin Arroyo in the Cal League is not the fastest way to do that. It's just not. It's to go get Luis Castillo. And they did that, and it's obviously paid off great. And as they said at the time, like, they believe when they got him, like, we're a postseason team and we want to make noise in the postseason. We don't want to just want to get there. And Luis Castillo is the reason they have a chance in the series. Like, that's exactly why you acquire someone like him.
Now, the reason this team is simply fine is basically what Jordan said before. They don't bop. Okay, you know, you see a baseball team, you're like, these guys rake. You watch the Astros. You're like, the Astros just hit, man. The Mariners don't. They do not just hit, man. They just get on base, man, sometimes. That will be the death knell if things don't work. It'll be they just have a game where the offense falls asleep and they lose like 5-1 or something.
It's very, very plausible. And obviously with the injuries, which they're already dealing with, it's, you know, when Julio was out and Suarez was out, this offense was rough to watch. And so that's the thing. But I do think the pitching will keep them in it. And I'll give a general state of being after we talk about the Blue Jays. So let's talk about the Blue Jays. Blue Jays projected, because this team is excellent.
Behind the plate, you can expect Danny Jansen, who is... Last year was like one of the worst hitters in baseball. And this year he, I think, has like 20, 18, 17 home runs or something. He's been great. He's been really good hitting for them behind the plate. At first base, a guy named Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is Vladimir Guerrero Sr.'s eldest son.
Oh, I recognize that name.
Yeah.
When I turned on the Jays the other day, I was like, where have I seen that name before? Yeah.
That's where you've seen that name before. At second base, Whit Merrifield. Acquired at the deadline from the Kansas City Royals. He has been quite hot. He's been wit hot recently. At shortstop, Bo Bichette, who was the third best player in the world over the last 2 months. At third base, Matt Chapman, who is just a worse version of the Matt Chapman you remember. In the outfield, you've got Teoscar Hernandez, who's always better than you think. George Springer in center, who's just as good as he was when there was a trash can clanging. And in the other corner is some combo of Raimel Tapia and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who is maybe hurt, maybe back. And then their DH is Alejandro Kirk. He catches sometimes, but because Jansen's been good, he's been DHing for them more often than earlier in the year. And then the rotation, Alek Manoah, the big boss, Ross Stripling, the stock trader, and Kevin Gausman, the splitter king. Jose Berríos, let's just talk about Jose Berríos right now as while they are a wild card team. So the Blue Jays won 91 games. They, I believe, finished nine games behind the Yankees in the division.
92 games.
They won 92 games. The Yankees win yesterday. The Yankees win their final game of the year. The Yankees did not. So the Yankees finished with 99. So they finished 7 games behind the Yankees. Big part of that is that Jose Berríos was probably the single most disappointing player in baseball. The Jays traded for him last year at the deadline. They extended him over the offseason. And he proceeded to lead the league in hits allowed and lead the American League in earned runs. He allowed 100 runs this year for a 5.23 ERA.
Yeah, and obviously when you have Jose Berríos, you're not going to take him out of the rotation. It's not like they had other options. But just super weird. And I've seen some stuff written about it. And it's like when you watch him, the slider's still moving like crazy. But clearly the command has really left him. And it's been, but not, I mean, like the walks aren't that high. That's the thing. Like you look at it and it's just like the strikeouts are gone and he's just given up a ton of hits. The Mo 199 hits. And so we would not expect him to get. Stripling has been sensational in the second half. And that's looking like a really smart acquisition. You know, Mitch White's gotten some starts for them too.
Because if I said to you, Jordan, if I was like, okay, you got three games in this round, and you've got, you know, Cy Young top five finisher Manoah, Gausman super reliable, and peak Berríos, you wouldn't blink. You would take them over the Mariners in a second. But that's not the Berríos that's on this team. Just so everyone knows, I don't think he gets that start. I think Ross Stripling ends up getting it. Now, why is this team good? Look at the roster, dummy.
I mean, obviously the top two starters goes a long way too. But unlike the Mariners, this team does bop, right? This team does get hits. You know, like especially when you have guys that don't strike out, like Kirk. And he, yes, you do have some big whiff guys like Chapman and Teoscar. But still, you know, they're still hitting, you know, 267. 267, George Springer, 267, Bichette, 290. Like, again, I know it's like, oh, well, you care about batting average. When you compare it to the Mariners, like, this is a big difference in hits, and this can make a difference. And Bichette has just been so amazing in the second half. And while Vlad has not been MVP level, he's had a great season. And it's just the kind of thing is you can't maintain the levels. I'm sure he'll have another season like last year at some point. He's 23, right? But this year, he's been merely great. And that is the standard you set when you are a Hall of Famers kid. George Springer, I really do think, is just being overlooked because he's been exactly what they, and I know that health has been a concern for him, but he's been exactly what they paid for, and he makes this lineup terrifying. Like a leadoff homer, that what do you think I'm most scared of for Friday? It's George Springer just hitting a leadoff home run. Like that's, you think I haven't seen him do it against the Mariners with the Astros enough? Like that's what he does.
And remember, this is Autumn George. Exactly. This is a man who come fall morphs into a supersonic being. He is one of the greatest postseason hitters ever, ever, ever. And now he's on the Blue Jays, so that's fine. Key to the series, I have two. Which Jared Kelnick shows up? If it's the one who is locked in, that's huge. If it's not, that's an automatic out. The other thing, Jordan, for me is can the Mariners lay off Kevin Gausman splitters below the zone.
Yeah,
in game two.
I think so. The Blue Jays are overwhelmingly right-handed, and that will, I think, help the Mariners lineup and possibly hurt the Mariners pitching. Right, Robbie Ray. This is going to be a tough assignment for him going into Toronto against this lineup as a left-handed pitcher. But again, like you mentioned, Kelnick. Like that's the thing. I mean, they could bring in Tim Mesa to face him in the seventh. But besides that, he should be facing right-handers. And that is obviously a big difference. This is also probably a time to mention that, like, this didn't even cross my mind. Hyunjin Ryu, right? I mean, that's another name that is a big part of this roster that has just, you know, got TJ and he's just gone. And that would also make this team look a lot different. But obviously every team has injuries, so you can't say that. Now, the Blue Jays bullpen is also not necessarily a strength. I would say that is probably another key to them. And this is a good time to mention Anthony Bass, who has been a very good addition to the team. But Anthony Bass and Zach Pop, both of those guys have made this bullpen a little bit better behind Jordan Romano and Adam Simber. But I have to mention Anthony Bass quote tweeting the video of Paul Sewald doing the sweeping motion after they swept the Blue Jays before they acquired Anthony Bass is very funny. I love that. But also Anthony Bass was DFA'd by the Mariners at some point, so I imagine that has something to do with it as well.
Picks. Who you got, Jordan?
Picks. So before the season, I picked Blue Jays Dodgers World Series, and I still feel kind of good about that. But I think it will either be Blue Jays in two or Mariners in three. That's kind of how I feel. I will feel fantastic if they can get it to Gilbert. They can win the first game. But that's kind of how I feel. Obviously, my heart is very much hoping that the Mariners can last another round, but this will be a great series. I'm very excited to watch it.
Blue Jays in one. All right, let's move on to our final matchup, the San Diego Dads against the New York Metropolitans. Let's begin with the San Diego Padres lineup. Who is not in this lineup? Fernando Tatis Jr. Why? He got a rash. Who is in this lineup? Behind the dish, it's Austin Nola, who the Padres gave up every single player on the Mariners for. First base is Josh Bell, who has been kind of underwhelming since his trade from the Nationals.
I mean, Drury's been playing first more. Like, they've kind of put them
they've
more
just been
and more
DHing Bell.
Yeah, DHing Bell or just only playing him against righties. So,
Brandon Drury at first base, then Bell at DH. Second base is the Crone Zone, Jake Cronenworth, one of the more exciting players in the NL West. Shortstop is Fernando Tatis Ha-Sung Kim. At third base, Manuel Arturo Machado, who very well might win the NL MVP. In the outfield, what a hilarious trio this is. Trent Grisham in center, who since bungling his outfield mate Juan Soto's hit in the wildcard game, had one season where he was an elite player and then has just fallen off a cliff into a ravine, but he's still decent defensively, so he plays center. In left field, former top prospect Jurickson Profar is good somehow, finally.
AJ Preller's beloved Jurickson Profar.
He did it, finally. And then in right field, Juan Soto. You know the name. Cespedes. And then the rotation is Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, Sean Manaea. What a weird group.
Other bench, very important to mention Jorge Alfaro, who I believe walked off like seven games this season.
And Will Myers, the longest tenured Padre.
Who is still there. Probably last little run here for Will Myers.
Now, how is this team constructed? My favorite thing about this team. There are only, I believe, five players on this roster who were originally acquired by the Padres. Five. I believe the Cardinals have drafted or signed originally by the Padres. I think the Cardinals have five in their starting lineup alone. Okay? This is a fantasy baseball
and even
team.
The Mets, right? I mean, even the Mets have a handful of dudes that they've kind of brought up, right? Nimmo, we'll get to them. That's what Preller's done, right? And you know, to some degree, the Mariners are somewhat like that, but they've at least had some more homegrown guys recently. But yeah, this team is just, it's all trades, man. And it, you know, you can't say it's been a totally bad strategy, but it obviously does result in some missing pieces and just kind of a strange collection. A very, very, very strange collection. Now, pitching. Well, what do we expect the rotation to be? This is actually an interesting debate because I guess Manaea has not been very good lately. So
This is a key. The Padres this year did not have Fernando Tatis Jr. This roster without him was good enough to win, I think, 89 games. That's a huge deal. That's a credit to the construction of this team. That without the best player on their team, they still made the playoffs. Very impressive.
Probably a touch credit there.
100%. But a big part of that has been the pitching. Darvish has been Darvish. Blake Snell has rediscovered his Snellness, and for the last couple of months has been so good. And then Joe Musgrove, Mr. Padre. You know the deal.
Let's not get too disrespectful here, but he's as close to Mr. Padre as we've had since Mr. Padre. But yes, the pitching is actually something of a strength. Now the bullpen is weird, very weird. I don't know, Josh Hader. Tell me about Josh Hader's Padres stint, because this is also an important thing to know about that.
Okay, so if I said to you, and we talked about this last night, Jordan, if I said to you, how's Josh Hader been on the Padres? You would say a disaster. However, he was a disaster right away, but in his last, I believe, 12 outings, he's allowed one run. And so he seems to have figured some stuff out. And is Josh Hader again, which they will need because the rest of this bullpen is just a bunch of guys. None of them are terrible. None of them are really that good. Nabil Chrismat belongs in a special place in our hearts, but he's fine. This team is, the more I look at the Padres roster, I'm like, the Mets are going to just jump on him.
Josh Hader allowed 13 runs in his first 9 outings with the Padres. And since then, he has allowed one in 10 innings. I mean, it's totally turned around for him. But still, I still wouldn't call this bullpen a strength. So I think that could certainly be an issue if the starting pitching doesn't show up. But look, there are still really good. Like, Machado and Soto is a pretty damn good place to start. And Juan Soto knows a little something about showing up in Citi Field and making Mets fans sad. So let's move on to our final team to talk about here. I know we're running a little long. Let's talk about the New York Mets, who I'm sure Mets fans listening to this were wishing we weren't talking about them right now. But alas, here we are, as the Mets will host the Padres at 8 p.m. on Friday night. All right, Jake, they won 100 games, but here they are in the wild card series. Who is on this team?
the catchers are Thomas Nito and James McCann, which is the problem.
Probably a good place to start.
At first base is Pete Alonso. Second base is Jeff McNeil when Starling Marte is healthy and Luis Guillorme when he's not. At shortstop is Francisco Lindor, who has just been everything he is supposed to be. Third base, Eduardo Escobar, has been one of the best players in baseball over the last month. The outfield is Nimmo in center, Mark Canha in left, McNeil in right, or sometimes Tyler Naquin. And sometimes you have Starling Marte healthy, and sometimes you don't. DH is a big problem for this team. Daniel Vogelbach, he hits against right-handed pitching and against left-handed pitching. It was supposed to be Darren Ruff, but then he got space jammed, and now it's either Mark Vientos, Francisco Alvarez.
Who, Francisco Alvarez, 20-year-old Francisco Alvarez, right?
Correct.
Just a totally crazy thing to ask of him. But, like, you got a lot of other great players. DH should not be sinking this team. And also, the pitching, they have some guys, right, that throw the ball.
Jacob deGrom, Max Scherzer, Chris Bassett, Carlos Carrasco, Taiwan Walker. I would say Bassett's probably the three. He's been really good over the last couple months, even though he tossed up a stinker in Atlanta. Now, why is this team good? I mean, look, they won 100 games. I asked Buck Showalter in a press conference last week whether he considered the regular season a success, right? Kind of a weird thing. 100 games. You won 100 games. You didn't win the division.
101 games.
And you bungled it at the end of the year. Would you consider that a success? He declined to comment, Jordan. And that's because this Mets team is in a very weird space where they did it. They did what they were supposed to do. You got to give them credit. If I said to you the Mets won 101 games, Steve Cohen, congrats to you. But everyone's disappointed because of how the season ended. And I think that's both fair and unfair because this team is freaking awesome. They don't hit a lot of home runs compared to what you might expect. They do. This team hits. When they're going, they bop. Okay, this team does bop. Nimmo, Lindor, McNeil, Alonso, Escobar when he's locked in, Vogelbach, and Marte when he's healthy is strong. That is a strong lineup. But the one concern is that over the last month, Jacob deGrom has looked simply mortal.
Now, the strikeouts have not been mortal. But if you do look at his last four starts against the... Now, this is the most important part about this. These starts have come against the Cubs, Pirates, A's, and then Braves, of course. Four starts, 21 innings, 39 strikeouts, four walks. So that's, you know, let's not get too crazy. Still
the FIP goes hard.
But a 6 ERA is not what we are used to from Mr. DeGrom. And yes, that is because we are holding him to the standard of best pitcher on earth. But they're going to need him to show up because the Padres lineup is a lot better than the Cubs and the Pirates and the A's. And so this is the time to do it. This is it, man. You gotta show. And I think he probably will, so I'm not too worried about it. But that is this is a run that we have not seen from DeGrom in quite some time, and that is worth noting. Now, the good thing is that they also have Max Scherzer.
Oh.
Going into game one.
Cool. Cool. Very cool. That is very cool. Yeah. Key to the series, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Quickly, matchups. Darvish, Scherzer, Snell, DeGrom, Musgrove, Carrasco, I think. Probably what it'll
be. I think Musgrove is, I don't know if they announced it, but I assume Musgrove would go to game two, but maybe not.
If Snell goes game two, I think that's the key to the series because I think he can outpitch
Snell in general.
I think Snell is the whole thing here, right? Mm-hmm. He could just win you a ball game. Now, the bullpen for San Diego is bad enough that Snell could win you a ball game and, you know, Tim Hill could lose you a ball game. But if DeGrom is mortal and Snell gets to go up against him, I really like the Padres in that. That being said, at the end of the day, the Mets won 12 more games than the Padres this year. That's a lot. And I think that just because they're matching up here in the first round kind of underrates how big of a gap there is in quality between these teams. And I think that the Mets believe that they're really good and aren't going to blink this weekend. Mets fans seem very worried because they are fatalist. I am not. I think they are going to smoke them. I think it's going to be two and see you later for the Padres. And the Mets will stomp on to play the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I was going to say, kind of sort of like the series with, you know, Jays Mariners, I do feel like this is either Mets in two or possibly Padres in three, where the Mets start sweating if it does get to Sunday. But yeah, no, it's I agree. The Mets are much better. I'm not denying that at all.
Like, the people are critiquing the Mets because I went down to Atlanta and got swept, and that's understandable, right? But like,
so would a
if
lot
they
of teams.
Play, no. But if they play the exact same games, they'll win them because the Braves are way better than the Padres.
Oh, right. You mean say the same games against the Padres?
Yeah, like if they play the same quality of baseball, I think they just beat the Padres.
Right. That's a really good way to put it. But yeah, no, I'm with you there. That game three, I would assume it would be Bassett. But this is one of those things last week against the Braves, but again, the Braves are better than the Padres, but it's like, you got DeGrom and Scherzer, like that should be, you know, the automatic dub. And it obviously wasn't last week, and we'll see about this weekend.
That's the podcast. Sorry, we went a little bit long today, but we had to preview the postseason for everybody. First round starts on Friday, midday, 4 games. It's going to be a wild weekend. I will be at Citi Field all weekend long. Check out my coverage of that over at foxsports.com. Jordan Schusterman will be on site at his apartment in Richmond, Indiana, all weekend long with screens pulled up, sweating out the Mariners. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. No email this week. How often will we be going during the postseason? Whenever a series ends, we will take care of it. Whenever there's something wild and notable, we will hop on and try and give you some brief recap coverage. Basically, whenever you're like, man, I wish Jake and Jordan could talk about that, our plan is to do that for you.
We will try to be there. And yes, obviously, off day Monday, which is unusual, but the way the schedule works out. So we will certainly be giving you a podcast on Monday morning, possibly even Sunday, depending on how short the wild card series goes. But thank you to everyone for listening. We're super excited to be rolling this postseason. Again, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast@gmail.com. Thank you to Andrew Emmer for stepping in for producer Chris this week and producing for us. And any last words?
No.
Okay, I have one. Go Mariners in the 2022 Major League Baseball postseason.
Oh, wait, do the Orioles play in the NIT?
I don't think
against
so.
The Brewers. Orioles Brewers 23 game set to be played on the off days in October starts now. Lyles
Burns. Good luck.
Lyles
with that.
Burns. All right. Goodbye.
Bye. Talk soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.